everybody. For the second time in three seasons, Sale's European campaign came to an end with defeat at the hands of La Rochelle, this time falling 45 points to 21 at the Stade Marcel de Flange in the Champions Cup quarterfinals. My name is Lewis. Welcome back inside the Shark Tank. And joining me to discuss a captivating but ultimately disappointing game of rugby from Saturday are my co-hosts Alex and James. Alex, how are you?
Good, Tal, mate. Feeling a bit foolish for predicting that we might win, but other than that, I'm fine. How are you?
All good. You know, I think we'll get onto this later on in the pod, but I don't really need talking down from the ledge here. You know, La Rochelle are a brilliant team, and there's no shame being beaten by them, even if the final scoreline was a bit disappointing. And James, how are you?
Yeah, fine. Thank you. Thank you, mate. Beer Garden's open today, so everything's looking up. I enjoyed the game. It was an interesting game. You mentioned that I went through the three stages of grief, which is absolutely right. But I thought it was quite educational for a number of reasons, and I'm looking forward to getting into that.
Exactly. So, I mean, let's, you know, very quickly, before we do three-word reviews, we'll kind of go around the horn a little bit. And obviously, Alex, first thing I wanted to discuss is, you know, this was a Champions Cup quarterfinal. It is a pretty resounding loss to La Rochelle. I mean, from your side, are you concerned about the nature of the performance? Are you worried about what this means for the rest of the season? Or are you taking it all with a pinch of salt?
Oh no, I'm quite positive about it. Having sort of reflected on it, I was a little bit disheartened in the second half while watching it. But I think, you know, having a couple of nights sleep and that kind of thing really sort of refreshes you. And to be honest, I think if we play like that for the rest of the season, we'll do insanely well in the Gaelic Prem, because, you know, that is by far and away the highest quality opponent we've faced all year. I think, without doubt, in terms of their quality when they were playing us, you know, they had their strongest team out by a mile, which both Exeter and Bristol didn't, who are probably the two that get closest to that level. And I think we showed some. I mean, the first half I thought was a superb game of rugby, actually. And, you know, we actually were unlucky to be behind at half time. And with, you know, a slightly, maybe a different referee, a different sort of referee and TMO combo, a different French TV director, or in just a non-French TV director. There's certainly an argument to say that we were the better side in that first half. And then we just got blown away in the second half. And you know, there is a concern there. I think what is probably the concern is the way that a high-class team like La Rochelle so easily identified our weaknesses. And you know, that's obviously one we're going forward. But I think, you know, again, you come back to what we've gone through this season. We've lost Dimes halfway through the season. Alex Sanderson's come in. He's not been able to put any stamp on this squad other than what he can do, you know, mid-season. So no players, nothing like that. He's not had a pre-season with them. To compete for the first 40, I thought was superb. And, you know, and to be the better side for the first 40 away in France, I thought was really, really good. So I think there's a hell of a lot of signs of life. I mean, there's a bigger question about, you know, can we cope at the top level? And there's probably a question over individuals. But as a team, I think it's a really good building block to where we want to be in 2 or 3 years.
And James, you know, what were your kind of takeaways? I know we joked about it, you know, kind of going through the stages of grief a little bit. But, you know, on reflection, you know, what was your thoughts from Saturday's game?
Well, the big picture, of course, exactly as Alex said, you know, on a journey of improvement, and we'll learn from this and we'll come back better. I think I just differ a little bit, not on the first half performance, which I thought in terms of the rugby we played, both defensively and in attack, was very, very good. We stayed in the game. We were under a huge amount of pressure. But I still think we gave away too many silly penalties even in the first half. We got pinged like quite a few in a row. We nearly gave away a yellow card. The issue wasn't nearly giving away a yellow, which we did manage to avoid. It was actually when we gave away the penalties and the manner we gave them away. They were all very soft. And yes, the referee's, you know, management of the breakdown was atrocious. In fact, the referee was just generally atrocious. But I, I, you've still got to adapt, haven't you? And I just think we didn't adapt under the pressure in the way that the top teams do in knockout stages in Europe. And all it did was it gave La Rochelle, who really did almost nothing at all for most of the first half, the opportunity to get field position and to relieve the pressure. And we put them under pressure, but we weren't able to convert it into points, as many points, because we were giving away penalties at times where you'd expect La Rochelle to be giving away the penalty. And we just let them off the hook, really. In the end, we did well to go into half time in touch. And we scored, you know, a really good try. And the attack looks like it's really starting to get going under Axe. I mean, we're not Quins or Bears, but it really is. Last few weeks has been definitely a lot better. A lot better structures, a lot better to watch. The second half, we lost the game in the first 10, 15 minutes of the second half. And it was a mixture of being very poor, again, giving away penalties, and I thought a lot of bad luck. The sucker punch being that sort of runaway try from the slap down. You know, and mentally there was no way back. And I think the bigger picture as well that I found in terms of my stages of grief, we had a day less to recover before this game. And I think that matters in knockout rugby. You know, you don't recover mentally or physically in the same way. You don't do the practice during the week. And when you picked yourself up for the Scarlets game in the way we did, the ability to do that again, even Exeter struggles to do back-to-back seasons this year. Only the very, very great teams, the Leinsters, the Saracens, have managed to do it year after year, game after game, and we're just not able to do that quite yet.
Right, so let's do some three-word reviews and then get the insight and thoughts of the other Sale fans. Mark Cole continued to build. Nick Watson, scrum was dismantled. Zach, onwards and upwards. Peter Taylor, worrying scrum fail. Jamie, valiant squad effort. SAFC Shark, one step beyond. Charles Edwards, just outclassed. Lee Boy, only one game. Ryan Winterbottom, win the premiership. And Smolsey, second half collapse. I think you can't really disagree with any of those for a start. All pretty fair. I think that, you know, the one thing I really want to kind of touch upon, Alex, is something we discussed, which is on the face of it, you know, Sale are beaten 45-21, 6-2. All the post-match talk is going to be about a rout. It's going to be about, a bit of a dismantling. But we were talking off air about this idea that actually, when it comes to knockout rugby, losing by 14 or losing by 25 doesn't really matter. They're one and the same, given that it's ultimately what happens on the day. And actually, when you're in that position and having to chase the game, you are going to ship tries. And that's what happened on Saturday, obviously. So what I want to talk about more is that the positives of that first half performance and the fact that we go into the break down 18-16, I believe it was. We survived a bit of a sucker punch from La Rochelle. We'd come back and scored a really well-worked try of our own. We'd really hung in there in that first half. And ultimately, there is a bit of a blow straight off the start of the second half. Once you start chasing the game, the try starts to ship and the scoreline looks a bit less flattering. But what did Sale do so well in that first half to keep the game in sight? And what does that say for where this club is going in the next couple of years?
I thought our game management, again, was really, really good. You know, La Rochelle's, when you look at La Rochelle's two first half tries, one comes from effectively an error in collecting one of their cross kicks, and then they've clearly identified that the way we defend leaves us susceptible to cross kicks, and Ohio West is good enough to kind of take advantage of that. But other than that, you know, La Rochelle didn't really play any of the game in our half, because every time we looked like going into our half, we put it back into their territory. I was looking at the stats before, and La Rochelle only won four rucks in our 22 in the whole game. And that was total. We had 19 in their 22, but you know, to sort of keep them at bay in the way we did, I thought was really sort of well managed. I think Faf again looked good in that respect. So I thought that was good. And I just think the accuracy was very good. You know, our defence was solid in that we hit well. You know, with a massive pack and big runners, and we didn't necessarily win the collisions like we did against Scarlets, but we did sort of match them, and that's all you can expect in a Champions Cup quarterfinal. You know, you're never going to go in at that level of the competition and sort of win the collisions like we did the week before. So I thought we did that well, and I thought, you know, that we won penalties, and you know, if AJ's kicking is better, it's a different scoreline as well. You know, we missed even 67% for the game. And that first penalty miss, I think, you think, oh, what if? So I think there was so much good in that first half. And particularly, I thought the try at the end was probably the highlight of the game for us, realistically. Just the way that clock's in the red, any mistake means it's into half time and, you know, we're 9 points down. And to execute like that, the pass from Curry, the hands from Sam James are superb. Byron McGuigan, just incredible. To, you know, the way he's in and out and then back into Sam James, offloading, taking out the man. You know, I think that was probably the best piece of attacking rugby we've put together for quite some time. You know, and it sort of played to all our strengths. We hit up in the middle of the field and then we exploited the space around the outside. So I think there's so many positives in that. And that's even taken into consideration that we got battered at the scrum, we got battered at the breakdown. La Rochelle had a very lucky try allowed, which I maintain shouldn't have been allowed, although I am a Sale fan, so I'm going to say that. And we gave away a lot of silly penalties. So it's almost, you know, we said last week against the Scarlets, it was the best we played for a long time. That first half, it wasn't the best we played because we didn't execute well. But actually, our base level of performance in not doing brilliant things and, you know, making some silly mistakes, our base level of performance was good enough to compete with La Rochelle. We then fell off a cliff. So I think, you know, that's all the encouraging things, isn't it? That we've clearly shown we are more than comfortable at this level for 40 minutes. What we now need to do is build so that we're comfortable at that level for 80. But we're in the knockouts of the Champions Cup where we don't deserve to be. We haven't had a pool stage. We haven't had a proper Prem season behind us and a proper success. So that's the, for where we are, we still outperformed, I think.
And so, you know, as we've said there, James, you know, we performed pretty well in the first half and the wheels come off a little bit in the second half. I mean, what were the kind of main issues that kind of came to the fore in that second half? And is it fair to blame it all on Simon Hammersley?
No, it's not all Simon Hammersley's fault. Clearly, it's not all of his fault. I mean, the fact that he's getting called into action so much would suggest issues elsewhere. But it's fair to say it's probably the poorest game we've seen from him in a Sale shirt. And in the knockout stages of the Champions Cup, it was quite exposing, really. Quite a public way to not have a good game. And, you know, it wasn't just that, you know, everyone gets done by a little bit of a bounce of a ball sometimes and made to look a bit silly. I just think, you know, they clearly target us with high balls and we didn't defuse them in the way that we should. I also think that, you know, they sort of demonstrated our lack of ability to beat the first man when we're fielding kicks as well, which, you know, just means that the kick chase, even like a good kick chase rather than a very good kick chase, is going to really, you know, do well in terms of field position and a really good chance of reclaiming possession. So it's not a turnover in the way it should be. And with someone like Luke James, for example, we're so used to him fielding every single kick. You never see him miss one, basically. And he genuinely beats the first man. He's not the quickest man, but he does have quick feet. And we've seen that last 2 weeks with him off the bench as well. He's been, yeah, with more playing in the centre type, really, in a sense of, you know, quick feet, getting offloads off. So I just wonder whether that's sort of been logged by the management. So it's not all Hamsey's fault. Where else? I mean, it's difficult, you know, when you're getting hammered in the scrum. I actually thought the scrum held up better than I thought after the first one. The first one was like one of the worst things I've ever seen as a Sales fan. Actually, after that, Bevan Rodd especially really took to task quite well. He was actually on the other side consistently throughout the game. We were getting hammered. Griff John was going back. Oost Hazen didn't make any difference. So I thought that actually we held up against Antonio better than I thought we would. And it's a shame, really, those penalties that we gave away allowed Antonio time to get oxygen back into his lungs. And that was really frustrating for me. And La Rochelle, I mentioned it on our group chat, they do it all the time in the top 14. Scrum gets called. Someone goes down, you know, with a little injury or whatever. People come on. The water comes on. they're literally bringing the oxygen machine on for Antonio. Get the oxygen in. He's ready for the next scrum. And he just tries to beast people. That's what he's there to do. He doesn't do much else. And then I thought that the other thing, as I mentioned, was just giving away those penalties, which was a real shame because it continued in the second half. We got hammered with field position and then they struck with, you know, a couple of good tries and then one very lucky one. I agree with Alex that I think that it was unfortunate, really, with the angles that were shown on television. But for me, it was a deliberate slap down with no attempt to catch the ball. It went forward onto Faf's knee. And for me, that was a yellow card. But, you know, these things happen. And it was just very unfortunate, the timing of it, because it just took the wind out of us, didn't it? And we had, you know, we did well to come back with some attacking rugby at the end of the game, really, considering what had happened to us in that first 15 minutes.
Yeah, and I think as well, you know, you look at the timings of La Rochelle's tries. You know, the game is very, very even for the first 30 minutes. It's 9 apiece. It's 9-6 in Sale's favour. And then all of a sudden, you know, La Rochelle, the first time they have the ball, it's a three-phase set move. The cross kick goes over, they score a try. You know, and that happens after they've soaked up loads of pressure for the first 30 or so minutes. They then get that aforementioned slap-down try on 36 minutes, which, again, kind of just inches you that further ahead and would have put them two scores ahead if it wasn't for that Sam James try on the stroke of half-time. But then you look at then what happens, you know, Sale done really well to claw back into the game and you know, bring it in basically evens at half-time. And then they score with La Rochelle score with probably their first proper phase of possession in the second half, that lovely strike move, which Raymond Rule finishes off. And then from there, you know, again, it just pushes them back out to 2 points, and then they're able to kind of build off the back of that. The second try for Rule, you know, which came off that unfortunate Simon Hammersley misplay of the kick through, that's at 50 minutes. All of a sudden, Sale are now down 16 points, and it's at that point where we're the idea that me and Alex were discussing about 16 points turning into 25, turning into whatever, kind of comes to the fore. Because at that point, understandably, heads go down a little bit. You're having to take the clerk off. You're having to take some of your big hitters off. And that's, you know, kind of the ball game, so to speak. Alex, I mean, you know, I want to talk about some individual performances from a Sale perspective, but I want to focus on La Rochelle a little bit first as well, because, you know, Sale fans, everyone's got very fond memories of La Rochelle. We like the yellow submarine and all the rest of it. Two players that really caught my eye in particular, Antonio, for obvious reasons, within the scrum, and Will Skelton, who I thought was by far the best player on the pitch on Saturday. I mean, those two first, but I mean, did anyone else catch your eye? Because I think to a man, La Rochelle played an absolutely superb game, and you could see with how some of their big players were performing around the pitch that they prepared very, very well for the threat of Sale.
Yeah, well, I think you have to focus on their forwards as well, because, you know, West looked to have a good game, but actually really only had a good game because he had a great forward pack giving him brilliant platform, and then when he made it count was sort of when the game broke up. You know, he didn't really win the game. Again, Kerbalo, I didn't think, had a great game. I thought actually De Klerk probably played better than him. But, you know, he just had a massive forward pack in front of him. And that comes down to, as you say, I thought Skelton was superb. Aldry coming back from French duty, also brilliant and has been for France in every game he's played. Victor Vito at the age of about 53, still looking like he's about 23. And I think what we sort of found, what perhaps found us out a little bit, is that in the Premiership, we can send Dan Dupria, Jean-Luc Dupria, Acker into collisions on their own. And we can be confident they'll win the collision, and that gives us time to get breakdown support in. And it worked against Scarlets, because we won the collisions against that Scarlets pack, who weren't as big as ours. And what happened in this was that we sent Acker. I mean, the one I distinctly remember is Acker going into Skelton and someone else. It might have been Sarzi or someone. And just getting stopped. Like, I've never seen him get stopped before. And then I think we concede a penalty off it. And it is just, you know, it's brilliant to have that ambition. But I think we kind of got educated a little bit in that area of the game. But at the same time, you know, the hits that they were putting in just never let us get momentum up. And then that sort of bred mistakes on our side. You know, thinking about when they competed at the breakdown and Pfaff gives that pass to Dan De Pria, who's sort of standing there not really knowing what to do. And it's because we don't have that fastball and we don't have that controlled ball. So they caused havoc at the breakdown, and then they also caused havoc in our defensive line. And I think all of that comes down to the forwards and those big power hitters. But, you know, you said it on game day, that they brought last week's starting front three off the bench, and they were, you know, coming on at 50, 60 minutes fresh as. And I think that, you know, that depth of international class that they have probably showed at that point. And to be fair, they won the game before they brought them on. But the fact that they had all of that in reserve, I think even if it had been tight on the 60th minute, they'd have still cruised away with it by the end, because they were able to bring those players on who kept up that intensity of all those forwards. So yeah, Aldry especially, I think, epitomised that. But just 1-8, their pack beasted us for 50 minutes and then went off, and they brought on an equally good pack, which, what do you do?
Yeah, I think actually our substitutions up front acquitted themselves pretty well, but the game was gone. And actually, there might be a learning there for Axe, just to sense that momentum shift, just that 5-10 minutes earlier. We've seen him make some big calls, like, you know, De Klerk came off a little bit early, but again, the game was going away from us by then. Maybe, you know, he could have sensed that mental fatigue and brought the likes of Neild and stuff. I thought Neild and Rob Dupree were brilliant when they came on. They really were very, very good. So, and I just wanted to just pause on the South Africans, the Acker, Van Rensburg, and the two Dupreeers. I think it's an education for us as a team, but it's definitely an education for them as people, especially the two Dupreeers. I mean, La Rochelle turned up with a very clear game plan to get straight under the skin of the Dupreeers, make the Dupreeers want to fight them all. Yeah, and I don't mean necessarily to get a yellow card or a red card, but in every contact. So, you know, my view is, if you're Jean-Luc Dupree and we're 10 metres out from the La Rochelle line and you run into Will Skelton, right, it's not a good place to be, right? And you don't have to try and then palm him off and then beat the next two as well. You don't need to do that. What you can do is focus on recycling possession, because what you're doing is you're putting their defensive line under stress, and you might get a penalty coming your way or a yellow card the other way or whatever it might be. And I think they did a job on the Dupreeers. They really did. And actually, I think out of our back row, Jean-Luc and Dan, they gave everything they had. You know, I'm not having a go at them here. I just think the La Rochelle got under their skin a bit. There's still some learning for them to do as rugby players. I think that Tom Curry, for example, really stepped up to the plate and was consistently excellent. Otherwise, I think Vito Aldreet, they had the edge on us in the back row.
And this is why, you know, we don't have to be taught off the ledge here, in that there is no teams probably in the entire Premiership who can roll out a forward pack that La Rochelle can. It's the nature of the top 14. And I'm going to kind of say my big piece now, which is this La Rochelle team might do the Champions Cup top 14 double this year. That is how good a team they are. And you go through their team 1-23, and that quality is so obvious and so stark that it's no surprise that they blew us away by 25 points. The key thing that I think we need to take away as Sale fans and as Sale supporters is that you can play Jean-Luc and Dan De Pria against London Irish and Worcester and even some of the better teams in the Premiership, because they can run over people and they can palm two or three off and they can do all these other bits and pieces. But fundamentally, what happened on Saturday was our game plan, which our entire squad has been built around, rightly or wrongly, which is dominate up front, bully other teams, got turned on its head, and it happened to us. There are not many teams in the entire game of rugby that can do to Sale what Sale do to a lot of lesser teams, and that's what happened on Saturday. La Rochelle, very cleverly from the beginning, Aldry, Gordon, very, very active in the rucks, very active at the breakdown, getting good at not just the Dupree's skins, but Tom Curry's as well. There's an early sort of scuffle between Aldry and Curry. You know, they went in there with the aim of, yeah, riling them up and getting them worked up. And then what they also did very well from a defensive point of view is they moved Will Skelton, who is a big, big man, around very, very well as a defensive point of attack. Now, that might seem counterintuitive, but if you go back and watch a lot of the tape, what they were doing is making sure that the second or third man from the ruck, i.e. the main position where you'd want to be running straight up the middle, was always Will Skelton. And that's why on the group chat on Saturday, we're saying, stop running into Will Skelton, because they deliberately put him and these other massive ball carriers there to clog up the middle part. And that's where Sale really struggled, in that we don't necessarily have the players at the moment to consistently go through the 10 channel or the 12 channel or the 13 channel, and we are very reliant on going straight up through the middle. It's what Aka van der Merwe does very well. But every time he tried to do it, you've got big Will Skelton there. And that was a massive, massive sort of tactical advantage that La Rochelle could leverage and they took advantage of. And ultimately, and it was said on commentary, by 50, 55 minutes, they were just bullying us around the park. And that's what opens up the opportunities for players like Raymond Rule and Dumaru and all the rest of them to score tries, because they had the entire field to play with.
Yeah, and just on that point, let's also not forget that even if we wanted to have that La Rochelle team, because we've got the money for it, we can't in the salary cap. And that's going to be a massive issue for English teams going forward, because you look at the names on that La Rochelle team sheet and we literally could not afford to have them all. The only team who's had sustained European success from an English point of view is Saracens, who did it through, you know, fundamentally not complying with the salary cap. And let's not get into that discussion. But, you know, it is so hard for English teams. And then add to that we were away at La Rochelle. And then add to that we were missing Lou Diaga, Manu Tuilagi and Ben Curry, three of the best players in our squad. I think, yeah, you have to kind of look at that La Rochelle team and you have to rebase your expectations and go, there is anyone else in the world other than a Sale fan would go, yeah, you're going to get absolutely hammered. And if you lose by 20 points, that's probably about right. But because we're Sale fans, you always have that little bit of hope. And because we've so consistently defied expectations of sort of player value versus performance with dimes over the last 10 years, I think it gives us that kind of belief that we can do it all the time. But actually, fundamentally, when it comes to competitions like this and one-off games, it's so, so hard to do. And, you know, if we had Aldrete and Vito, it'd be a different game. But, you know, again, then we'd be breaking the salary cap and we wouldn't be able to compete in the Premiership. So I think we have to kind of rebase our expectations on all of that, because as you say, this is a La Rochelle team that have had that level of player, but they've also had them for 3 or 4 years, haven't they? You know, how long have Weston Kerbalo been there? Antonio Aldrete's been brought in, Brice Dulan's been brought in, Dumaru. It's, you know, it's all of those players, but then also having them for that amount of time. It's almost an impossible task, I think.
So I feel like we've got to a very good stage with recognising the limits of Sale and ultimately what kind of went wrong on Saturday. There's one more thing from me before I hand it over to you guys that I wanted to discuss, and that's Tuaera Kerbalo's horrendous dive at the ruck early in the first half. Just horrendous stuff. If you haven't seen it, it'll be on the BT Sport highlights, but basically there's a bit of pushing and shoving at the ruck. Somebody puts the hand on him and he flies back as if he's been hit by a sledgehammer. Very embarrassing. And ultimately, that should mean it's a moral win for Sale on the day. That aside, anything else from you guys on La Rochelle before we turn our attention back towards domestic matters?
I just on that, I think the whole game, they were kind of, it's that screaming and shouting that you can now hear from the bench that probably always happened, but it's so football-esque. And I know that's not, it's, I don't want to be one of those rugby fans who goes, stop acting like footballers, but stop acting like footballers. It's just, it's Itoje screaming when he wins a ruck in the middle of the field that means nothing. it's, you know, and Curry's starting to do it as well because he's been around England. It's the bench going nuts. It's, you know, the diving and the everything, the whooping and hollering at every decision. I really don't like it. And it's a nature, it's the sort of a feature of professionalism, and I think you have to accept it because it matters more because you're getting paid for it, you know. But I just thought La Rochelle did very well because it wound me up from sitting behind a TV screen. So to cope with it as players must be horrible because it was just so annoying, and you almost want the crowd in there because I'd rather hear like 10,000 people booing Aka van der Merwe for, you know, colliding with Tahereh Kerbalo's face, then listen to the La Rochelle bench going, ah, it's just, I hate it. It's a symptom of modern day rugby. There's nothing I can do about it, but I just wanted a rant. So, yeah, that's me.
I think that there is a really good point there, and we kind of mentioned it earlier, but there was this element of La Rochelle playing within as much of the rules as they could and pushing those boundaries as much as they could as well. And I want to say credit to them because we've always seen this. The very best teams are those who can bend the rules when it suits them. They're the teams who can really push the limits and force referees into making difficult decisions. You know, why is Richie McCaw considered one of the best rugby players of all time? It's because he spent half of his time offside or off his feet. You know, there is a skill to that, and La Rochelle have that. And that's why I feel quite confident that they are going to go on to become a very special team, at least this current iteration of them. And I guess actually that leads me on to my final point on the Champions Cup, which is that obviously La Rochelle are through to the semi-finals of the competition against Leinster. They'll play that one at home, and Toulouse versus Bordeaux is the other semi-final. James, how do you predict the rest of the competition going?
I couldn't tell you because I didn't have Leinster down to go away to Chiefs and do what they did. And it showed, you know, they do have, they obviously can do something a bit different in the Pro 14. They don't have the size of budget, but they do have the size of squad and they have fresh people because of the way that they can rotate in that competition. So I like Leinster for it. I know that everyone's going to be going off the back of French teams, but it was pretty dour rugby yesterday, I thought, and I think Leinster have the gears to beat them. Now they've got to go away from home, I think, again, have they? Or yeah. So that's a tough job, but they've got the pedigree to do it, and it proved that they didn't need Sexton either, because Ross Byrne came off the bench after about 10 minutes and took them to the win. So I'm going to go Leinster, but I think I might be the only one.
I guess that means Toulouse-Bordeaux falls to you then, Alex.
Oh, it's a great matchup, isn't it? Ntamack versus Jalibert. I'd have to say Toulouse, I admit I only watched the last 20 minutes of the Bordeaux game, which by all accounts was dire. Austin Healey told me at least 18 times in the 20 minutes that I watched that it was dire, to be fair. But yeah, I'd probably go Toulouse on that one. But such a good matchup for the French team to have the two tens playing off against each other. It's the equivalent of Kieran Wilkinson and Tom Curtis playing against each other for Nottingham against Doncaster.
Yeah, we were robbed. We were robbed of that head to head, and I'm still livid about that. But fair play to Toulouse. You know, their first win at Clermont, I think, since 2002. Nearly 20 years that you've not won away from home somewhere against a rival. I mean, that's to go and change that, I think, makes a big statement.
Right, we spent enough time on the continent. We'll pivot back to Champions Cup when we know the teams who are going to be contesting the final. So Sale's European adventure is at an end, but their domestic one is going to continue this weekend. 12:30 kickoff against Gloucester. The irregular kickoff time is due to Premiership Rugby moving the games to accommodate Prince Philip's funeral. So, James, what can we expect from the Cherry and Whites on Saturday lunchtime?
Well, thank God there's no Aldrey or anything like that coming down any channels this weekend. But it is worth saying that La Rochelle struggled against Gloucester And really sort of squeezed through, I would say, in the end. It was a efficient and effective performance, but it wasn't brilliant to watch. You know, in a way, you know, maybe Gloucester put in a slightly more effective performance against them at home. So, and they've got a week's rest. And we know that that's important. So we're going to be maybe feeling a bit mentally fatigued, maybe a bit of scars, maybe a frustration brings a bit of energy back. But I think we're going to have to rotate a few players because we've played the same team twice in a row. So, you know, coming up against a fresh squad against Gloucester, I think that's going to be tough. We sneaked it against them last time out, 19-22, close game, you know, and I think I've got a sense that it might be a bit closer again. Their form in the Premiership, actually, they've won three of their last five and they've got two bonus points in that time as well. One try bonus, one losing bonus point. So three out of five isn't bad for a team second from bottom, I think they are. They've lost against Falcons away and Quins away without losing bonus, but they've, since the new year this is, but they've beaten Saints at home, lost to Saints at home, lost to Irish away, lost to Bears at home, and lost to Bath away. There's a lot of losses in there, but they all got losing bonus points. So they've been playing really poorly. But we know what it's like. Rugby's a confidence game for these mid-table sides, and there's not that much difference between kind of finishing 7th and finishing 11th. We know that from our own experience. And sometimes you just come up a bit short and you keep losing games by 3 or 4 points. They have won three games since the new year. Worcester at home, Wasps away, and Exeter at home. They beat Exeter 34-18 and got a try bonus point. And that's kind of released them a little bit. As I said, three out of their last five games they've won. So they're starting to get back, I'd say, towards the median. They've had their really bad time. They're now coming back to the median. Are they suddenly a top four side? No, absolutely not. But now are they back to being that kind of competitive mid-table side? Absolutely. And they're going to want to get back at us for that close game earlier on in the season. So I think the confidence might have improved. They're going to be coming fresh at us. Some of their issues, one issue has been sorted, which is second row. When we last played them, they were really scraping around for second rows. And obviously, they've brought Garvey in on short-term deals. They've had to be playing academy players. Tom Savage, obviously, captained them, but is now playing in Japan. So a lot of turnover in that position. But they've got Ed Slater back. He missed some of the games earlier on in the season due to injury, and he brings a level of leadership and commitment, which, you know, you're never going to, you know, sort of do one over on Ed Slater. He gives 100% every single time. And Matthias Alamano as well, obviously, he's got about 60, 70 caps for the Pumas, and he's playing nearly every game. So I think that they've sorted out their second row issues. The issues they haven't sorted out is number 10. Which is a real problem for them. Adam Hastings doesn't arrive until the summer. Lloyd Evans is injured. So they've got George Barson, really young and inexperienced at 10. I don't think out of the complete top draw, although I think he's been acquitting himself reasonably well in the situation. They might choose to go 12 trees at 10, but they seem to be preferring Atkinson and 12 trees in the centre. And actually, as a young fly half, that's a pretty good thing to have because you've got two people there who've played fly half at the top level. Both are really good distributors. Both are really good at creating opportunities and both have kicking games. So it really takes the pressure off. And obviously, 12 Trees also kicks at goal. So it's just allowing George Barton to sort of feel himself around, just making sure he's making the right calls and the right plays. So it's not a problem solved, but it's sort of been papered. The crack's been papered over and it's now starting to perform to a high enough level where we've got to watch out. Watch out for Ruan Ackerman against a lot of his ex-Lions colleagues. You know, I think that'll bring an extra few words here or there, and he'll be up for it, the physical challenge that Sale will bring. But my head-to-head is Santiago Carreras against, I think, Luke James. I think after Hammersley's performance the weekend, we can expect Luke James to start. They're both similar age, sort of 21, 22. I think they're both full of potential. Carreras in particular, you know, he's very raw, but I think he's got a lot of potential. So watch out for that head-to-head. Both, I think, really good under the high ball and fully committed in the kick chase as well. So over to you guys. What do you think? How do you think Sale should approach this game, considering we're off the back of really tough 2 weeks in Europe?
Well, I think ultimately they can approach this game like they did the La Rochelle game, just with much better results. You know, you have the ability here to bulldoze over the Gloucester pack. It is a strong pack, but it's, you know, not where they were a couple of years ago when they had Mostert and Grobler and some of those other big names. So, you know, Celtic can revert to type a little bit, I feel, in this game. You know, they can rotate the squad potentially a little bit. You know, Curtis Langdon is someone who can probably start over Acker. You can move the props around. You know, we're obviously without Lou Diaga, but there's options in terms of the second and back row that you can make, and fundamentally you can play the exact same game that we did against La Rochelle. You are going to get better results out of it because the quality of the opposition this week is going to be significantly different to that of last week. So I don't anticipate any significant changes in terms of like playing style. I think that we're kind of melded to it. But I mean, Alex, I guess from your perspective, who are the players that you want to see, you know, get a shot? Because as James said, we're going to have to rotate given two pretty tough weeks in Europe.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's a saving grace that we haven't overplayed anyone necessarily. You know, there was a time when 2 weeks in Europe would have meant a full 80 for Faf in both games, and we've actually been able to rest him a bit and keep him relatively fresh. And it's a saving grace that we were the early Saturday kickoff, so we've kind of got max rest time. So, you know, I think we'll still see some people involved. And it's a really tough one to judge because, you know, as you say, Gloucester have had a week off. They're going to be really fresh. And they've got a lot of players who kind of came back from injury in that Exeter game who are therefore going to be even fresher. So I do think that we need a pretty wholesale change. But, you know, we've said this before, making a lot of changes can really damage us. So it's a massively difficult decision. I think I agree with you on the play style, and I think, you know, you'd look to bring in the players who have been involved off the bench, wouldn't you? I think probably keep Faf at scrum half starting and bring Raffi off. I think probably both still fresh enough. But kind of the likes of Cam Neill certainly drew a start. You know, the replacement front row from last week probably all will get a start. That's the kind of rotation I'd be looking to make. And then you're sort of easing people in. You mentioned Luke James, who absolutely, I think, should start. You know, we've got players who kind of fell out of the side a little bit. You know, we haven't seen Will Cliff for quite a few weeks. And I think as much as Faf and Raffi are certainly the future, you know, there is a lot to be said for Will Cliff having had 2 weeks of not even being involved in the match day 23. And therefore being a good option against the Gloucester side, who are going to be massively well-rested. So I'd consider bringing him back in and maybe having one of Faf or Raffi on the bench, actually thinking about it. I think AJ has had a lot of game time, and Rob Dupria has actually looked very good off the bench, albeit mostly playing at 13 or 12. You know, I would be bringing back in Aaron Reid after, you know, you think about when we finished the league, Reid was still involved. The likes of Conor Doherty weren't that far removed from the squad. I do think, you know, we've had our sort of almost first 15 proper go to La Rochelle and Scarlets, and a lot of those people need a break. You know, Tom Curry has had a really intense Six Nations campaign with England. He came back and had a week off, which I think was really well timed, but then he's had two massive European games and probably again needs some time off. So I think Cam Neill coming back in, certainly. We don't think Jono is available, so that does present a bit of an issue in the back row. You know, someone like Sam Dugdale, again, not seen for a while.
Well, but Ben Curry hopefully is back.
Is he?
I think Ben Curry is going to be available, which means that Neill could play at six.
Yeah.
And Ben Curry at seven, and then you keep Dan Dupria probably for a bit of continuity at eight, I reckon.
Yeah, and to be fair, there is also a possibility, given we've had Beaumont and Visa play in the second row both weeks, we might end up seeing Jean-Luc go into the second row, which I think is so hard because every change you make, you think this is a massive risk, isn't it? And you don't want to change all 15 players, but at the same time, if we play the same 15, we're going to have 30 good minutes where we'll be up for it, and then we're going to fall away for the rest of the game, much like we did against La Rochelle. So I would be bringing in all of the bench from last week, virtually, pretty much to start, other than maybe Raffi Quirk, and then getting in, you know, those squad players that I talked about, Reid, Doherty, Dugdale, to come back in as well, because I think we are in massive danger here of getting run over by a Gloucester team with a lot of internationals and a lot of returning high quality players who will be able to massively trouble us. You know, Libby Rees-Samit, Johnny May, Mark Atkinson, Billy Twelvetrees. That's the Gloucester backline that, you know, could be in top four, couldn't it? I mean, we always say it's Gloucester's year, but that they've got massive, massive threats. And if we play Yard and McGuigan again, they'll just get run ragged.
Right, so plenty to chew on there. No pun intended. Let's do some predictions then, because I think ultimately this Gloucester game is going to be a bit of an unknown in terms of how we can approach it, just how significant those changes are going to be from the team, but you anticipate some level of rotation. So, Alex, I'll throw it back to you. You know, prediction for Saturday lunchtime.
I think it's going to be a tough and unattractive game, but I still think we've got it in the tank. So I'll say Sale 20, Gloucester 14.
Okay, James?
22-18 for me. I agree with Alex. I think it's going to be a close game, but I just back us just with a bit of fresh energy and some clever rotation just to come through.
I'm going 25-19 Sale, Cam Neill hat-trick on his well-deserved return back to the starting lineup. So that is the podcast for this week. As you may have seen on our Twitter earlier today, we've pushed back the Academy pod on Patreon. We're going to do that in May off the back of Sale announcing a brand new set of Academy fixtures as lockdown restrictions begin to ease. So we thought it made sense to push that back. But do keep checking the Patreon. There's plenty of new content that's going up on there later this month. We're just working through some ideas for bonus pods. And there's obviously a certain bit of news that's going to be breaking in the next couple of days in terms of player personnel, which we'll have some analysis of on the Patreon immediately, as well as on an emergency pod, which we might be recording soon. So we'll keep that mum for now, but we obviously want to say a massive thank you to everybody who continues to support the show, both in terms of the main pod and indeed on Patreon. We really do appreciate the support. We also want to thank everyone who sent in the three-word reviews. Thank you to everyone who was watching the game along with us effectively on Saturday. And thank you to everyone who's made it this far on this week's show. So that's everything from our side. Alex, James, anything else you want to mention?
Hire non-French TV directors for European games in France. It's my agenda and I'm sticking to it. Other than that, no. Thanks everyone for listening.